Welcome to another episode of Meenal's World, and this week I was joined by Vicky Broadbent, who is another guest of mine who I've met on Twitter. And I know this is a recurring theme that all my guests are people I've met on Twitter. Maybe I should have just started another podcast called People I've Met on Twitter. I think that would have been more fitting. But speaking to Vicky this week was really important, and we also had a special guest appearance with Radhika, which you will hear at some point. I didn't edit it out because I thought, you know what, this is just part of my working life and this is part of who I am. So I'm not going to try and make things look perfect when really they're not. But speaking to Vicky was very reassuring for me personally, and I hope it helps a lot of mothers who are listening to this as well. Well, not just mothers, but women who are looking to become mothers and women who are trying to understand what it's like to have a family and have a career at the same time. Because one thing that Vicky did say was that when you're at the peak of your career, when you're actually trying to build your career and progress, it's usually aligned with the same time that you try to become a mother as well. And I never really thought about the impact that has. And Vicky talks to me about her own journey as a film director. And obviously, not only that, she's got two sons as well. She's trying to raise them as feminists, and how these two young boys have taught her so much through lockdown about patience and adapting and learning. And all of these things I feel adults are not very good at. I feel that children are much better at molding in new environments. And we spoke about a lot, but to summarize it all, we speak about how her parents tried to give her a better life in this new country that they came to. Her mother came from Cyprus, and how Vicky tried to work really hard to make sure that she can give the best life to her two sons as well. And I think this year has been very testing for mothers especially, and I really hope this episode helps a lot of people who are listening, not just mothers, but women as well, who want to understand a bit better what it's like to be a mother and also have a career at the same time. I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to the show, Vicky. Thank you for joining me today. I know that we're all stuck in this terrible lockdown. We're all trying to find ways to escape this reality that we're living in. So I'm really grateful that I can at least connect with you in this way. I know it's remote, but thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Nal. It's great to be on your wonderful podcast. And it's been a pleasure listening and reading your tweets. I feel like you're such a strong voice, you know, needed voice in this very kind of... it's been a really sort of stressful year for everybody, hasn't it? And you've spoken very candidly about lots of things. So thank you.
No, Vicky, I know that this year a lot of the people I've met have been online and on Twitter, for example, and I think we've just been in a very special space this year because everyone is sort of trying to get through it somehow. We're all trying to help each other, all trying to work together to come with positive solutions. And I think that I don't think I would have been able to get all of these connections if we weren't in a pandemic. So I'm grateful for the pandemic in one way, that I've made such amazing friends online, like yourself and all the other guests I've had on the show as well. But Vicky, before I go into any question, before I ask you anything, how are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. I feel really grateful for the online friendships, the connections, the fact that, you know, my family's healthy, touch wood. Obviously, it's heartbreaking seeing so many people suffering and the loss that people are experiencing. I'm just taking it day by day, I suppose. I've been flung, like many parents, into homeschooling their children, which does come with strains, particularly as a working parent. I mean, it's stressful for any parent. But I found that when I'm working, you know, sometimes I'll have to work till 2, 3 a.m. in the morning, and then you get up again. and it can feel quite relentless. But equally, we've all been brought very much close together in so many ways. I've learned so much about my kids that I just wouldn't have been privy to because it would have happened in school hours. Our like relationships have bonded even more, and I was already really close with my kids. So and they've taught me, it sounds really like sort of a bit cliched almost, but you know, they've taught me more than I've taught them, because they've shown a lot of great strength and resilience over this period. And they're not sitting around kind of complaining. They're just getting on with things and living a really simple but quite a lovely life, really, you know, despite everything that's going on.
Yeah. No, I think you use the word flung into homeschooling. I think that word has been, this is quite a good way to describe what's been happening. I never imagined I'd be raising Radhika in this way, just completely alone. And I feel, a part of me felt quite angry early on, thinking like everything was taken away from me, you know, like my maternity leave, everything I planned, the birth of Radhika, even she's 6 months now. I don't know where time has gone. But she's just so happy in just being, like, she just sort of realized that she's a human now. And she's shown me, and she's reminded me actually of the very simple things that we just don't take for granted, that we do take for granted, just being present. And I think that's one thing that we've all taken away from this pandemic, that sometimes we just have to find the simple things in life to be content and to be happy.
Yeah, I read a quote this morning, actually. I saved it on my phone. I hope it doesn't stop the recording if I try and find it. Oh, maybe it will. Anyway, you've got it in here. And it's by Frank O'Hara, and it says, in times of crises, we must all decide again and again whom we love. And I thought that just really resonated. And it doesn't even have to be whom, it can be what you love. And I think it spoke to me because it's really brought into focus. It sharpened what matters. And with your baby, you know, it's this, yes, of course, it would be lovely to have the mum meetups and those kind of things, of course. So I'm not trying to take, you know, that away. But actually, when you get to the crux of it, all that really matters is kind of you and your little family.
Yeah.
And that love that is really, that, you know, loves everything, isn't it? It just sees you through things. Yes, it is hard. And I think we can't deny that. As long as we're honest and open about when we feel lonely and when we are alone, when we are sort of navigating all these really, really choppy waters that are quite scary when you look at it. Well, they're scary anyway, but sort of I was kind of thinking how would the future generations look back at this in history lessons? And we're living through such a scary time, really. But I think it's just step by step, and also realizing that hopefully in 6 months, in a year, life will start resuming and start resembling what we used to have. And I hope that we take some lessons with us into that next phase about about climate change, about protecting the world, about spending more time on what matters. When I think back to even a year ago, some of the things that I would get upset about. And now I just think, God, and I know contextually it's really easy to sort of reflect on things and say, oh, you know, I wouldn't have behaved like that. But I do think we're all changing our behaviours and even our viewing habits, like what we're watching and what we're giving a chance to. And I'm actually grateful for that. I know it sounds quite trivial, but I remember sort of watching a couple of episodes of Schitt's Creek, and I was like, yeah, not for me. I couldn't get into it. And a couple of other friends, we've all been, you know, Netflix is our social life, right? So they were like, no, give it another chance, give it. And it was just the most joyful, life-affirming show. And I just know that a year ago, I would have been like, no, if it doesn't speak to me within 10 minutes, it's gone. And I think we have become more patient, and in doing so we're actually not missing out, like we're giving things a chance, we're allowing friendships to blossom, relationships to blossom, things that felt hard, we're going, no, actually we're going to be patient with that. And I think we've become a lot more forgiving. And I know that sounds quite a silly example, really, but it was just something that made me think,
yeah,
I'm so glad.
Well, it's one of those things, Vicky, that I think that it will take us some time to absorb and reflect what's truly happened. I was speaking to a journalist a few days ago, and she was like, oh, Mila, how you've been through a pregnancy, you were protesting, you took the government case on, you've given birth, now you have. And I was like, actually, I've gone through quite a lot. But I've never sat down and sort of absorbed that and sort of meditated on it or thought about it, because, well, I haven't had a chance to for obvious reasons. But I think this is one of those experiences that we've all faced that we'll be talking in years to come. and we'll still be learning. In 10 years' time, when we reflect, we'll still find learning points in what we've seen this year, because we haven't just seen a pandemic, Vicky. We've seen, like, our society has been sort of shifted in such a way. We're talking about racism much more. We're talking about politics much more. How have you been navigating that with your sons? Because to explain things like Black Lives Matter, to explain things like why Donald Trump had to go, why the pandemic has left us in a position where we're still in a lockdown. I mean, I'm sure they have lots of questions. How have you been navigating all of this and trying to sort of make it child friendly?
Yeah, I mean, I want to say, first of all, there's been so much to navigate, as you're saying. And I think I'm very candid with my children. I always have been, always really honest. And I think, and we've talked very openly, and as a family, we've experienced loss during this pandemic. And they were really strong because we cried and we talked and we were open. So on a personal level, that was really important. When I first had, when I had my first son, Oliver, I experienced a traumatic birth, and I never spoke about how I was feeling to anybody. And internalizing all of that and sort of dealing with all of that every day without being open to kind of my husband and my mum and all the people that are really close to me was actually quite dangerous in a sense, because it made me worse and it made me, you know, unwell. And it was only when I eventually 10 months later sort of let everything out that I was able to sort of heal, and I had CBT and things that really, really helped me. And that was a really interesting lesson of don't pretend that you're okay. Don't pretend that you're strong when you're not, because mentally it's very damaging, and it damages people around you as well. So I think that I sort of, and because I'd never felt like that before in my life, it was a shock as well. So I sort of, it was very scary. So, and I think for a lot of us, we've internalized so much, and not felt that we've been able to speak openly about things, and seeing the uproar, I think was very important. There's a lot of resources as well that I've used. A very close friend of mine, one of my closest friends, has written an amazing book called Bringing Up Race, How to Raise a Kind Child in a Prejudiced World, Uju Asika. And one of my close friends, and this book has been vital in how to navigate race and talking about race and in a way that is light. So intentionally so that children feel you're not telling children off for questions. You are talking openly. I mean, my family are Greek Cypriots, and growing up, you know, I was born in 1980. Growing up through those years, I didn't see people that looked like me on TV or, you know. I always remember thinking, gosh, why was I not born like blonde with blue eyes, you know? And I remember it was only really when sort of the Kardashians started getting famous, when Jennifer Lopez kind of, because people would say to me, oh, you know, you remind me of of them, like at uni, very flatteringly. A lot of people call me J-Lo, which is really nice. But it was that thing of going, oh my gosh, finally I'm seeing women who look like me. And representation really, really matters. And I think we have come away since there, but there's so much and so much inequality, and there's so many experiences that we wouldn't live through. So we need to hear what that's like and the realities of that. So for me, it's been not being scared to show children those inequalities, to talk about Black Lives Matters, to talk about what happened with George Floyd in a way that is age appropriate, but also not being scared to say this has happened and this was horrendous. And you know, there's another resource that's really, really good called The Week Junior, and it's a newspaper for children from 8 to 14. And for full disclosure, I've worked with them before, but we've been a long time readers of it, and that's been remarkable in weekly sharing world events with children in a way that's written for children, you know, complete with children in mind. And I think that's really important. as parents, you don't have to have all the answers. You, in the sense, not all parents are teachers. I was a former teacher, but we'd, you know, you're not meant to be equipped to. We've never had a pandemic before, so it's really about just not being scared to educate yourself and reading from other people and talking it with your children and actually saying, let's research this together. Of course, it depends on the age, but you're never too young, as Uju writes in her book, to start talking about race with your children and calling stuff out. I remember not long ago going to a shop and being talked to very slowly by a shop assistant who assumed I couldn't speak English. And I spoke back at a normal pace and, you know, I'm British born. And there's no, you know, it shouldn't matter. She thought she was being helpful, but it was that kind of... and then she continued really speaking very slowly. And I found it really patronising. And I just left it. I didn't say anything. But when I got out of the shop, my son was like, what was that about? And I said, you know, that there's a lot of bias. There's a lot of unintentional racism. There's casual racism that goes on. And it's not right. I think it was that day. It was about picking battles. And I thought, oh, I'm just not going to. Yeah, I'm just going to leave it that day. But I think it's also important for your kids to see you standing up, to see you marching, to see you advocating for change. And I think my kids have seen that, hopefully, from me. Maybe that wasn't the best example, but I have spoken up before many times and will do again. And I think that that's what's important, because we're building this new generation of kind children that wouldn't vote in, hopefully, someone like Trump. Wouldn't, you know, that's the goal, right? That we're going to leave this place better than we found it. Through our children, as teachers who don't have children, but who can affect the next generation.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was very waffly.
No, Vicky, I think everything you've said has been very eye-opening, especially as someone who's got kids who are a bit older than Radhika, for example, and I can sort of see what the next few years will look like for me as well. And I appreciate what you've said, because I was raised in Gibraltar. So my parents came from India, and I remember once I was coming back from school and someone actually just randomly came out of nowhere, threw my brother off his bicycle and called him a Paki.
Oh my gosh.
And I just stood there thinking,
oh my gosh, awful.
And I just stood there thinking, what's just happened? I didn't know what, I was like probably 6 years old. I ran home, called my dad. My dad came to sort it all out. But my dad didn't have an answer for us, because he was trying to protect us from this scary world. He was trying to make sure that we weren't scared of the kind of future we would have. He was always telling us that you can achieve whatever you want. You know, you're educated, you're going to school. We'll make sure that you have a good job, you have the career that you want. But I think my parents are always trying to protect us and saying that bad things probably might not happen to you. You won't be racially abused. And we were brought up in this little bubble. But I think that kind of made me a little bit disconnected from the world. I didn't really know the realities of what was happening, which meant that when I was younger, when I was growing up as a teenager, I didn't really know what was happening around me, which meant that I wasn't sure about what kind of things I could do to make the world a better place. I think that it is really important that we educate our children on what's happening. And I think that this pandemic has allowed us in some way to completely decondition ourselves and sort of hit a reset button and say, okay, let's start everything from scratch. But you touched on a few things there, Vicky. You spoke about your traumatic birth experience with your son, and you also spoke about being on TV and the things that you face as a broadcaster. But let's go a little bit back to your birth, the birth of your son. You talk about being a traumatic experience, Vicky, and you said you only spoke about it 10 months in.
Yes, so it happened in 2010, so it was quite a while ago now. But yes, completely bottled everything in until sort of I got to, you know, the breaking point almost of kind of 10 months in. I remember going home for Christmas to see my mum and dad and just being really open with them and my husband and saying, you know, I'm not well at all, really. And every day has felt horrendous, kind of thing. And I felt really sad because we're sort of taught from a young age in a way, and the media plays its part in society, that motherhood will come easily, that we are, you know, this was a job we were born to do. And it's so when you're faced with trauma or those who can't have babies or whatever it may be, we inevitably, the default is to feel that we're failing, and there's a lot of shame around that, and around feeling like you're just not having a good time with your baby, or you're struggling mentally. And I think things have changed in the last 10 years from 2010 to now, in the sense, thanks in great part to tech, to social media, to women having voices on platforms and sharing. I mean, it took me 5 years to feel strong enough to blog. Eventually, I wrote a blog post called Being Honest, Having a Traumatic Birth, which was read by many people, that kind of meant a lot to me. I think if I look back on the last decade blogging, that probably stands out as something that I'm most proud of, in, you know, as in, and the fact that helped me. Sorry, my child's just walked
it's
in.
Okay.
Come out, I'm recording. Okay. So doors are kind of going. It's very hard, isn't it? The realities of recording with children at home. Oh, and he slammed the door for good measure. But yeah, I think that I'm sad that I didn't feel that I could speak. But often, you know, there's this whole thing of, if you're struggling, reach out, talk about it. But when you're in under those dark black clouds and crippled with phobias and OCD and worries, and how can you reach out that easily? You know, it is difficult. So anyway, eventually I sort of spoke up, and I know that my husband and mum and dad wished that I'd spoken about it far sooner, and that I hadn't suffered in silence. And but I still.
What were the physical symptoms of what you went through? Because I've had Radhika for 6 months now, Vicky, and it's been like, it hasn't been easy at all. I'm not going to lie. It's been very difficult. And you use a very good word there, where the stress and the fears that you have sort of cripple you to a point where you can't reach out and you're too afraid to reach out. I remember when Radhika was maybe a month or 2 years old, 2 months old, the health visitor called, and I was like, I don't want to say anything because I'm scared they're going to just come home and like just have a, like, you know, check out the baby. And I was terrified. I was like, I don't know what I'm allowed to say, what I'm not allowed to say, what is right and what is wrong. So I almost just put on a facade and said, yeah, everything's great, everything is fine. But really, I was really struggling. But the physical...
I'm sorry to hear that.
The physical symptoms of that for me were not there, because I think I just went on autopilot and I said, just keep going. Like, you know, something will change at some point. She'll sleep through the night. She'll start eating solids and all these things, all these little things you hang on to, like, you know, you'll get there. But I feel like a lot of women miss out on what they're actually going through because they miss these signs.
I think for me, I had a liver condition in pregnancy, ICP, I think it's called now. It was called OC at the time. And there wasn't a lot known about it. And I was constantly monitored and I was very fearful. There's a risk of stillbirth there. I think, I don't know the stats, but it was frightening time. And I was induced at 36 and 6. And I... very quickly went into labour, but I was left on the ward, and they said, you know, because I wasn't in great pain, my pain threshold went against me in this instance. I was left, it was 6 a.m. in the morning a few hours later when they were like, right, got to get you to theatre, and I had an emergency C-section. So it was all very, it was a shock, the whole birth, and it was literally the next day that I started having intrusive thoughts, and I was felt down, and I didn't recognize it because I hadn't really had that to that same extent ever before. So I just, like you, I know it's slightly different situation, but you know, similar in the sense that we were just like, right, I'll feel better once I get home, I'll feel better. Or, and I wish I'd just talked about it and got help sooner, because I wouldn't have needed to have suffered for those 10 months. I mean, sleep deprivation is terrible for mental health as well. So this is such a hard thing. And it's something that we as women feel that we have to, like, maybe bear alone, especially if you're breastfeeding, because you're you know, you're the food supply chain, aren't you? You're like,
it's just milk, really, it's milk on tap, as I say, Vicky.
Yes. So even though I had a husband who was waking up at night and helping me, and I was, you know, I couldn't express, he didn't want to take the bottle. So it was really hard. It was like I had to do a lot of that stuff anyway, because it was actually interesting, because when I went to the GP at the time, there was a locum on, and he said to me, "You look fine. I think it's just totally normal what you're feeling." And I had to kind of fight because at that point you had to have a referral for therapy through your GP. You can self-refer now, I believe. You'll know more than I do. So I was like, no, I need to see someone. And I remember my dad had parked outside the GP surgery waiting for me, because I needed that like moral support to go. Because it's very easy to put lipstick on and pretend to smile. There's a lot of mums that say, "Look at this photo, I look really happy with my baby. I'm actually destroyed beneath that smile." Like, I sort of felt like, you know, I deserved an Oscar for the performance of just trying to keep everything together. But when I did get help, it was so, even that first step of going, "Wow, I've said I need help," was a bit liberating and made me feel better. And then I learned a lot, you know, I learned more about kind of supplements like vitamin B6 that's meant to help with mental health. I really brought exercise into the mix in a big way, which helps hugely. But CBT was amazing, because it gave me what I would call like an emotional first aid kit, from the breathing exercises to the meditative kind of exercises to how to deal with OCD. It was just such a, it was so helpful. So much so that it gave me the confidence to get pregnant again, even though I was very scared to do so at the time. I thought, no, okay, I'm gonna do this. And it was a totally different pregnancy and birth, and it was really, you know, so far apart from the first. And I mean, I adore Oliver. I'm so close with him. My first son and my second son, Alexander. But you know, Oliver's my best friend, and I talked to Oliver about this. And I, when he was about 9, I think, or 10, I just said, you know, I said, "Look, when you were born, mummy was really sad, and it was so difficult for that year, and I felt really upset. I missed out on a lot of things." And at the end of it, he turned to me and he said, "That was a really sad story, mummy," you know, and it was just really moving. Yeah. I think one day, you know, seeing them, and how I think it's been really important to me to be quite honest with them about stuff, to see, a bit like what you were saying about your dad, I felt with things with my parents, that you feel that they're these kind of immortal human beings almost, and that they're untouchable. And then actually, if one of your family members gets ill, or your relatives, or, you know, it's very hard to deal with that, because you sort of think that life isn't so rosy. So I think for many children, this pandemic, it's been so challenging in so many ways. But I think, and to some extent, they've lost a bit of innocence because of it.
Yeah.
But I also think that they have built great strength and sort of fortitude, resilience, and empathy because of it.
Well, Vicky, obviously, when Oliver was born, you were kind of, I think it was your last resort, really. You were just sort of taken to the point of asking for help, because you probably left with nothing else at that point. But what was it like, for example, for your mother? Because for my mom, for example, my mom is only telling me now the things that she went through. I remember just last week she was saying, "Mila, when I'd give you a bath, I'd just cry because I was alone." And I felt really sad. I was like, that must have been really difficult for my mom to come from India to Gibraltar, not English not being her first language, not knowing anybody. They didn't have WhatsApp and FaceTime back then.
Yeah.
Like, they would send letters to India, and by the time it reached, it was like a month later anyway. So everyone was behind on what was happening. And she would say that we'd give you a bath, we'd go out to play, but I would be crying at night because I felt so alone. And mental health, obviously, at that time was something that wasn't so much spoken about, especially in our communities. What was it? What was your relationship like with your mother? Was your mother very honest with you about her feelings and her emotions as well?
Yeah, I mean, she has been honest, but I think that, interestingly, she talked a lot about feeling the odd one out. So my mum and dad, they met at university, my mum came to England when she was, I think she was about eight. I can't remember exactly. I know that they went a bit back and forth for a while, but when, and I remember her saying when she had me, she, because her and my dad, we grew up in a place called Ilkley in Yorkshire, which is this very picturesque little, it's almost like a village, but it's a town, but it's tiny and sort of gentrified kind of place. And she said that she remembers going to, you know, like a coffee morning thing, and nobody would speak to her because she looked different. She eventually, this other lady turned up who was lovely, and they became good friends. But she remembers feeling very much like a fish out of water. So she had a, you know, she was educated. She's got an accent, but she's highly educated, and dealt, not that anybody should, regardless of education or whatever, but she felt she was treated quite as if she was, you know, stupid and undermined. And I think it takes great strength to, I remember my dad said, you know, my dad saying as well that when he'd applied for jobs, so many jobs, you know, nobody cared that, you know, people that were English and white would get the job above him, even though he was more educated than them or had more experience. And he talked a little bit about that, a lot less than my mum, but he did say, I could imagine that being so soul-destroying as well, to be trying to build a life for yourself and your family. And you know, he's very entrepreneurial and you know, did very well. And so as a child, you know, I did have a very, I'm not going to deny, I had a privileged lifestyle growing up because of how hard they both worked and what they achieved. But the struggles were definitely there, and particularly for my mum when she moved from Cyprus over to, they moved to Brighton first, and sort of sharing, you know, a room with her other sisters and just going through a lot of hardship. She had to learn English in a year, and then, you know, it's unbelievable actually when you think about how, yeah, sort of the hardships that the immigrants were faced with. So not just the racing, but also the practicalities. I remember her telling me that she had really bad tonsillitis and she had to have her tonsils out. And my granddad sort of dropped her off and said, OK, go and find the doctors. And, you know, she couldn't speak a word of English and had to, like, navigate around this area to try and find a doctor and try and explain what was wrong. I think there's a lot of trauma there and those experiences in a way. But talking about them, writing about them, I think it is very useful. I think that's why as creatives as well, whether it's our poetry, doing things like this, we're sharing, and other people can feel less alone because of it. Because loneliness is a really big thing, particularly with mothers, and when you're suffering from postnatal depression or post-traumatic stress disorder or whatever that it may be. We self-isolate, don't we? We isolate ourselves intentionally because we feel shame. And in doing so, no one else can connect with us to say, well, I've had this. No one can normalise it. So I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and we realised that we both worry about things that might seem trivial, but we've got this kind of pattern and we have to break it. And we were talking about it. And I actually remember thinking, gosh, I never thought this friend of mine ever had silly, intrusive thoughts like I did. I mean, they're not silly, but, you know, just because I just thought, oh, it's just me that sometimes still gets these and has to kind of break the cycle. You know, like where they say to you in CBT, if you go and keep switching a light on and off because you think it's going to control something, you've got to stop the ritual, and then it stops the thought eventually. So initially you feel a bit more stressed, but then it tapers off and you kind of, you could. So anyway, I was chatting with this friend, and I remember thinking, wow, I didn't know that she. I remember another friend of mine always saying to me, "Gosh, I wish I was like you, and I just didn't worry about anything." I was like, "What? I worry about everything. I just probably just look strong, you know." So we're all just, yeah, we're not pretending. I think we're just it's part of, it's a cultural thing as well to some extent that we have to come across as being really strong all the time.
Yeah,
but
yeah, you know. And I think that it's. As women as well, we feel that we have to hold it together for everybody, because we feel that if we if we slip up or if we get upset, then it might just sort of trickle down to the rest of the family and feel like we need to hold it together all the time. And I think that's what's probably been the most difficult, because especially during the pandemic, when women don't have that access to communication or speaking to people. Vicky, I didn't even know about postnatal classes, NCT classes, because it's just something that never came up during my birth plan or anything like that, because we just couldn't do any of it. And it's only when my mother-in-law says, oh yeah, when I used to take Nishant to these classes, I was like, what? Like, these things exist? I took Radhika out to the park last week, and I think she saw babies for the first, like other babies for the first time. She was completely fascinated. Wow. She was like, other humans exist as well. And we've just missed out.
Oh my gosh, you don't think of those things. But wow.
We've just missed out on so much. And I really do think, Vicky, that not just in my case, but a lot of women right now who've gone through this pandemic, given birth, even people like yourself who are trying to homeschool, we're going to reflect on this in years to come. And actually, we'll give ourselves a pat on the back and say, well done for getting through this, because it's been very difficult. But Vicky, another thing that you also alluded to earlier on, where you're talking about working in this industry of TV and broadcasting, and maybe not seeing people who look like yourself on TV. So just take us back a little.
As a child. Definitely as a child. Now, obviously, yeah, now, of course, wonderful.
Now it's very different.
We're having, yeah, amazing representation, and we're learning more about each other's cultures. My children and I have been watching Bling Empire, which is on Netflix, which is, you know, it's so interesting to see Asians in LA and just on, like, to see reality TV programs. Before, it was like constantly like the white experience, white American, white English. And I think, yeah, just it's wonderful that we're now, yeah, we've got. And it's not just it's about the storytellers being from ethnic minorities, the storytellers getting the chances. Because if gatekeepers only have one shared or a few shared lived experiences, it's going to be hard for them to. But actually, these are universal stories, and that we're learning about worlds that we didn't know about and cultures we didn't know about. And I think this is why I've always, because I was originally a filmmaker, you know, and I still feel I'm a filmmaker. The way that I create moving images definitely changed. If I'm just thinking of my ridiculous TikToks.
I was
going to
say,
what,
your TikToks are quite good, Vicky.
I know, they're absolutely ridiculous. But you know what? They're bringing us joy. And it's like, whatever brings us a bit of silliness. I was trying to get my husband to do one last night, and he was like, never, ever, no way. You know, he's very camera shy. So yeah, it's like a miracle even to get a photo with him. So yeah, he was like, no way. So sorry to yawn, like you.
No, I've just had a yawn as well, Vicky, and it's got nothing to do with you. It's just
collective yawn. No, it's just from not sleeping enough.
Yeah, but Vicky, when you got into TV a long time back after you graduated, did you feel like you had more obstacles to get to where you wanted compared to your like British counterpart?
Women, yeah, I mean women. Full stop. Are in a minority, particularly as directors. When I was, I wrote a book, Mum Boss, and when I was researching that book, I think the stats are only, I might have to come back to you on this, but when I was a director, I think there was only 4% of female directors, because motherhood, in the film industry, because motherhood is a big reason for that. As your career starts kicking off, it's when you're thinking, you know, you're probably like 35 or whatever, and you're thinking, I want to have a baby now. So that then affects your career projection. And now I think it's 7%, so it's not much better. So that's an obstacle already. I mean, I know that, listening in on people talking and discussions, and when I worked in the film industry, that women weren't trusted with big budgets. Yeah, there's so much sexism that's inherent in the film and TV industry. I think it is slowly improving, a bit like as we're talking about race, and slowly there's still a great so much that we have to achieve for equality when it comes to racism, when it comes to sexism. The gender pay gap's a really big thing. It's going to take 100 years for that to close. How can that be? Like, you know, I hope it closes in your daughter's lifetime.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know. And this is one of those things that I always talk about. You know, we talk about race equality, gender equality, pay gap, and all these things. And like flexible working hours, for example, like as a doctor, I can't decide when I go into work, when I can't go into work. And even a few weeks ago, I was just thinking, like, my husband doesn't have that mental load of when he goes to work, right? Like, I have that extra mental load. I have to make sure breakfast is ready. I have to make sure the baby's ready. I have to make sure she's got her milk, she's got food. I have to make sure the clothes are ready. Like, all of these things. I know it sounds really trivial and really small compared to, like, the bigger things I would have to do in a hospital, like save a life, for example. But it is a mental load, right? These are things that just nag at you every single day. I mean, I don't sleep at night sometimes thinking, what am I going to do tomorrow? I have to clean the house. And
yeah,
it's all of these things that are completely underestimated. And I feel that as a society, we just expect women to get on with it, because we've seen, not just us as women, but our brother, like my brother, for example, and Nishant, we've seen our mothers go through it and we just think, yeah, this is just what women do. Mm. But really, it has a mental load. And I always wonder if in my lifetime or in your lifetime, we'll actually see the change. And the reality is that we might not. But the only thing that we can do is obviously start the conversation and plant the seed. And, you know, like you've written a book about it, I'm doing a podcast, and these are the small things that we can do to create the change. But you have two sons, Vicky.
I think it's really important to share that load. I'm really lucky that with my husband, we share things equally. My children do chores. My dad was hands-on. You know, I think those things are really important. I'm raising feminist sons. You know, ultimately, I think that it doesn't have to all be on you, and it shouldn't all be on you. Yes, when we've got a pandemic. Your baby. Hello. Hello. Okay. Hello.
Hello.
Do
you want to join me and Vicky?
Hello. Oh, she's gorgeous. Hi. Is that
your mom? Mother-in-law, yeah.
Hello. Oh, hello. Nice to meet you. Hi.
She just wants a bit of attention from mommy.
Okay, beautiful. Hello. Oh, she's gorgeous.
Sorry about that, Vicky.
No, don't be sorry. This is flexible working. This is it.
That is
action.
True. We're just talking about the extra load that women
this
have.
Is so
and
important.
Here we are.
And you know what? Don't ever apologize. I took my son when he was younger to a big shoot with a very big brand, and I was the only woman over the age of 30 that was representing this beauty brand. And I took my son, and I remember some of the male people saying that were working on that shoot, oh, are you going to bring your kid to the shoot? And I was like, yeah, because I am walking and talking what I'm trying to change. Yeah. And yeah, it takes some of us to put our heads a bit over the thing and go, this is it. Like, I'm a working mum. You want me? Here are my kids. And, you know, I've done that a lot. And also lots of great institutions have welcomed that as well. Like with the BBC, they were like, bring your kids, bring them on camera. Yeah. You know, I'm like, and this is pre-pandemic when you could go into studios. And I think it's this thing of, things need to change, and the pandemic is showing that things are changing. Going back to when I was a director, there were lots of hurdles. I remember people telling me endlessly that I didn't look like a director. And I remember sort of, I've got highlights in now, but when I was younger, I had lots of highlights, and I remember dyeing my hair really dark again because I thought, I'm not going to be taken seriously if I don't go back to like dark hair and not very much makeup. Why should I have to change? What is this? It was other people telling me I needed to look different in order to be taken seriously. And I think with age you learn, I'm just going to be me, and that's okay. Yes. And do what I want. But, you know, I think it comes with self-confidence, but that takes a long time to grow.
I think one of the things, Vicky, that I've learned is that initially I was afraid of how I'd cope with like doing a podcast and doing all the media stuff with Radhika, and I almost felt like that was my weakness of having a child, because it meant that it would stop me from doing. But I feel like it's my superpower. Like, just now, my mother-in-law said, look, you need to take, if someone just dropped a baby in front of me last year while I was recording, I'd be like, oh my God, what do I do? But, you know, we adapt so quickly as women, because I guess we just have to. And I think that's something that we all need to celebrate a lot more and not see it as a weakness. We need to see it as our superpower.
Yeah, and we're seeing more and more. I can't remember there was a famous like A-lister, and she had the breast pumps on and her picture on Instagram. And before, we were made to have to hide. And it really resonates what you were saying. When I started my blog, I was a director and I'd won this, you know, award from Channel 4, and I'd won quite a few awards. And I, you know, I'd worked so hard to build, like, I'd started to build a reputation as a filmmaker. And then I had a baby because I had polycystic ovaries, and I knew that I had to have a baby sooner rather than later. So I got pregnant at like 27, 28, which was seen as very young if you're working in the film industry. And people, I remember even a sound man on set calling me out in front of all my crew. I was 5 months pregnant. And he said to me, oh, don't you think you're taking a massive risk on your career to be pregnant. You've just won these awards, like, kind of basically telling me, like, what were you thinking? And I remember feeling so overwhelmed. Like, you know, when you're, and as a director, you're the mum, right? You're leading the ship, your direction, your vision. And I just remember having all these tears prickling behind my eyes and having to go to them. And I thought, how could it, like, he feel comfortable to undermine me? Like, he's basically saying you have to choose one or the other. And yes, it's indicative of reflective of the industry and how short-sighted it is and how limiting it still is. But also, it just felt as if you were saying you can no longer be creative. And one thing that I discovered, motherhood made me very creative. It heightened, because it showed me unconditional love. This doesn't mean you have to have a kid to be happy or to be a great creative. I don't mean that. For me personally, it gave me this real, I don't know, hyper sense of feeling, yeah. I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely, Vicky.
It's hard to explain. And the juggle is there. We have to get better at boundaries. We have to say no if we can't do something. You don't have to do everything.
Yeah.
And you have to work smartly and not feel that you have to be to mother everyone, which is something that I found quite hard to learn, because I was always maternal.
That is what I'm saying, is our superpower, that we adapt so quickly, and we get this, as you said quite correctly, like a hyper vigilance, and all your senses just heighten on a completely different level. And I think that's the beauty of motherhood, and I'm so grateful for people like yourself, because Vicky, I know you probably get this all the time, but I do want to say that you have empowered me on many in many different ways, and I'm really grateful.
Thank you so much.
I'm really grateful to have connected with you, and I'm sure that you've got so much more great stuff coming along the way. But what are you working on now?
Thank you. I feel the same about you, so I'm truly honoured to hear that. Thank you so much. And actually, what you were saying about as women, we don't reflect very easily. We kind of don't, you know, when the journalist was saying all your illustrious achievements and the change that you're creating and the voice that you have, like, we often don't look back, do we, and say, oh, I did that and I achieved that. And honestly, like, today I was thinking, oh, you know, I haven't achieved the things I thought I was going to achieve when I was 21. And then I'm like, why are you beating yourself? Why are we so hard on ourselves? Yeah. You know, and I think that we need to start reflecting on what we've done, but also telling each other, like, you know, the good stuff. I can't remember, a therapist told me that we remember things. I think we don't really remember positive things. I think you remember the negative 7 times more than the positive or something. Mm. So you have to repeat to yourself the good stuff in order for it to really, because we've got the power to, like, rewire our brains, right? It's like elastic up there, but we just keep repeating the same stories, and often we're really tough on ourselves.
And it's people like yourself, Vicky, reminded me to be easy and just to, like, to celebrate the small wins, because we don't do that enough. And I think that with the pandemic, because we haven't had so much exposure outside the house, or we haven't had different experiences, it's very difficult to have that perspective sometimes, especially this year, which has been really tough on all of us. But Vicky, you've been at home obviously with your kids and everything else, but are you working on anything special? Do you have any special projects coming up?
What do you mean, aside from my TikTok, my TikTok career, that is, I think I've got 62 followers. Okay.
Wow, now, which getting is, somewhere. You know,
it's a special day when I reach. I remember when I set up my Twitter account, and I remember when I reached 200 followers. I remember thinking, wow, I had 200 people at my wedding, and now like I have 200 mostly strangers like following me, and you know that, like, and that is a beautiful, that was genuine joy. Yeah. And along the way we're like getting so carried away because we reached this person and that million and that, you know, just silly little things, right? And you lose that joy. And what I found with TikTok is there's such a joy to not really having many followers and doing it for fun with my kids, and just it's really liberating. And a lot of my friends are like, oh my gosh, finally you're putting your silly self out there. Because I think sometimes, and another thing to do with being a director was that I was scared to show like the silly side, and I felt a pressure to always be very wholesome and always be very, because of my culture, and also because I don't know, like I just felt like, would people not take me seriously? You know, I've spoken at committee meetings at the House of Commons. Can I like then go off and like do something really stupid? Yeah. And I think the pandemic's just made me go, yeah, I'm a three-dimensional person like you are. And there's lots of sides to us. So, but I can't remember the question. I'm really sorry. I've like blabbed on to, oh, anything exciting that's coming along. Well, I wrote a screenplay during lockdown one, very rough, you know, awful, like printed it out to show my mum and then shredded it because I didn't want to show it to her because I was like, no, I'm not ready. It's really rough. My mum was an English literature teacher and lecturer. So I always go to her with like first drafts of stuff, but I have got a little bit of writer's block around it, which I need to get over and get back to it. Cause I would really like to finish that. Yeah. And it's a bit of a comedy and
great.
So we'll see. But I'm still, I feel tremendously lucky that my work has continued because tech, as you know, is growing, and it's growing at a really fast rate as we consume media via tech. So, you know, I'm continuing to work with brands that really matter to me, on things, and I'm so grateful for that, you know. And yeah, we'll just see what happens. I do love the broadcast stuff. I do miss not going into studios, but I also like the fact that any filming I'm doing is from home and radio is from home. Because
so essentially what you're saying, Vicky, either we expect your TikTok career to kick off or a book to come out. Something is going to come out.
Well, who knows? I mean, I'd love to get back to my directing career at some point. Right now, I don't think that would be compatible with my, you know, motherhood and other things that I want. But eventually, that is the big dream. Not to sort of not do this as well, but to do both, you know.
Yeah.
And I miss directing. I miss being part of the creative process from, I mean, I was a writer director as well, but I, you know, just to, it's so wonderful to see, so precious to see your work on screen. I'll send you some links to my short films and stuff. But yeah, I miss that.
I think, Vicky, when you do go back to it, you're going to appreciate it so much more. And I think that's the beauty that we're all waiting for now, to go back to some sense of normality and just appreciate even just going out for a cup of coffee with a friend, enjoying the sunshine. Can't wait to do all of that. But thank you so much for your time, Vicky.
No, thank you so much. It's been absolutely wonderful. And here's to, you know, meeting in real life when life allows. I'd really like that. Yeah, take care. Thank you, Mina. Bye.
And thank you, Vicky, for joining me this week. And thank you to all the listeners out there who continue to show all your love and support. And I really, really love connecting with all of you. So please drop me a message on Instagram or on Twitter. And I try to get through all my DMs every week. And remember, I have the Tuesday Morning Podcast, which is out every Tuesday as well, where I answer all of your questions. I will leave Vicky's Instagram and Twitter handles in the show notes below. And I will see you all on Tuesday.